What was it like knowing that Matt Hancock is in your TV program? You must have been rubbing your hands, all of you, nudging each other.
Pretty apolitical, to be fair. But yeah, of course. It's
hold on a minute. Was there an operation that springs out in your mind?
The one that really sticks out in my mind was towards the end of my career. Bullets flying all over the place. One of the lads got shot and killed immediately. Dived into a ditch to sort of square myself away, overwhelmed with fear. Thinking, what the fuck is this all about? That trip away, that tour, it was the final nail in the coffin for my mental health.
Tell me about the opportunity that arose for you when you went out and saw the drug cartels in South America.
Mexico, but that place is
madness.
Scary. There was a torso on the floor with no head, arms or legs, and there was a bag next to it. A copper emptied the bag and everything that was missing rolled out.
There must have been a point where you're not carrying anything. You know they're going to be carrying. Did you get the fear at all?
We got sketchy in Mexico. We had a hit put out on us. And then as that was all playing out, so everyone's on edge anyway, there's police and military there. The cartel, they don't give a they're crazy.
Welcome to the Eventful Lives podcast. I'm your host, Dodge, and I'm the founder of Bournemouth Sevens, the world's largest sport and music festival. On this podcast, I speak to proper characters of all lived eventful lives. Do us a favour and hit that follow button and be sure to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook and TikTok at Dodge Woodall, where we've now had over 100 million views. Jason Fox is a former Special Forces Commando and TV personality. One of the main faces from SAS Who Dares Wins on Channel 4. Foxy tells his story of SBS selection, fighting in Afghan and dealing with major PTSD. He also delves into his dangerous encounters with the drug cartels of Peru, Mexico and Colombia. This is the eventful life of Mr. Jason Fox. Foxy, welcome to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me in, Dodge.
Yeah.
Eventually found the place. Eventually got here.
We've been talking about this for a while, haven't we?
Yeah, we went to went to the rugby, didn't we? That's where we first met.
That's right.
Remember with
Mac. Stevie Mac and Staz.
Yeah.
England rugby. They had a box there and got invited. That was a good day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good day. That was it was off the back end of the pandemic. It must have been a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years.
And since then, we've been saying,
yeah, let's do it. And we're finally here.
Yeah.
Quality.
I've run out of excuses. Run out of excuses.
Got me.
No, I'm only joking. No, it's good to be
here. Mate, really looking forward to this. And there's some funny moments on that day. We've got to start having a few beers. It's like being at a wedding. You know, they go on, glass of champagne. Oh, go on in. Glass of wine. Yeah, go on in. Beer. Before you know it, it's like, anything else?
I went along and thought, I'm not really going to drink today. And it was it was just a waste of time on my part. Yeah. I burnt a lot of energy thinking to myself, I'm not going to drink, and then fucking got shited.
Yeah, it's got, good day.
Yeah, it was
good. Day on the smash at rugby. England, I can't remember what it was, England, Wales, I think.
It was basically me, you and Staz with a load of old people.
Wasn't
it?
That's right.
Do they listen?
I don't know. Foxy, let's roll all the way back. Where did you grow up and how did you get into the SBS Special Forces and then become a TV celebrity?
Jesus, that's a massive question. Well, I was born in Plymouth originally. I was born in Plymouth at the end. It was not originally.
Well, my second time.
I got born again. Originally Plymouth first. That's because my old man and my old dear were in the military down there. My dad was a Marine. My mum was in the Navy. And then bounced around after I was born. I was ill, actually, when I was born. I was born premature, but moved around a bit. And we went to Basingstoke. That's where my brother was born. I had a decent upbringing. My dad's great. My mum's good. Both of them are great. My dad's great. My mum's good. They're both great. They're both great.
And your old man, was he your hero? Was he a mentor? Did he guide you in any way?
I look up to him. He's always been, he brought me and my brother up and me up brothers. The other brother came along a little bit later. He's got an affiliation with Bournemouth. You'll probably know my brother.
Go on.
Jamie Fox. He ran Bliss. He basically ran Clute and,
okay.
All that. He worked for Izzy.
Okay, Izzy and Bronson.
Yeah, because he knew them. He ran the Dancing Duck and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, we'd know each other. Yeah,
my old man brought us up well. got us into outdoors, got us into fitness, all that sort of stuff. We didn't, you know, we, it wasn't a privileged upbringing by a fucking long shot, not living in Luton, but he done well with us. And I've always looked up to him. He's quite a perfectionist. He always strives and puts 110% into whatever he's doing, whether he was working or playing sport or whatever.
Where were you when you first got triggered to say, you know what, I want to get out of this lifestyle now and I want to go and join the Marines?
So I was at school, like completely, my GCSEs were a write-off. I knew they were going to be a write-off. And then I also, towards the end of school, me, a couple of lads and a three girls, we bunked off towards, you know, we were 15. I remember bunking off and we ended up getting absolutely, we had a place everywhere as a wreck, done it?
Yeah.
Nicked a load of booze from our parents' places. The only stuff I could get hold of was a litre bottle of Bacardi that I stole off my old man. We ended up going around this little hill around the back of the wreck, drinking cans of Diamond White or whatever it was, and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And then when we ran out of all the cider, I pulled out the bottle of Bacardi and ended up just finishing it on my own and got absolutely... I ended up crawling back to school to the class I was supposed to be in. Absolutely shedded. Anyway, long story short, I wasn't allowed back to school again. Just because it was a... Yeah, I turned up. I think I was running around the school naked at one point. There was all sorts of fucking shenanigans. I got driven home by the fucking head teacher.
Was it?
My mum, yeah. My mum was like, what the fuck? My old man, I think I ended up getting my stomach fucking...
Pumped.
And yeah. my old man was fuming because he'd lost a bottle of Bacardi. He didn't care that I was in a shit state. He was like, you owe me a bottle of Bacardi. Still tells me it to today. Like, you owe me a bottle of Bacardi. But, yeah, so because of all that, I was like, I've got to do something here.
Mm.
And my dad had obviously told us stories about the Marines. And I was like, right, if I'm going to join the military, which is the only option as far as I was concerned, I'll join the Marines. So did all the applications, went to the careers office up in Luton, just not far from the football ground.
Yeah.
And yeah, then left home, 16.
16 you joined?
Yeah.
Did you?
16.
And what about moving on then? So actually in selection, what was selection like for you at that time? What did you have to do? Did you have to do the hills in Wales and then go out to the jungle?
Yeah, do all that.
Yeah. What was the most difficult of the two?
They're both difficult for different reasons. Like the hills is about seeing if you've got the motivation.
Yeah.
Because no one gives a shit if you go. No one cares. There's so many blokes. And you've got to get up every morning, get your kit on, it's raining outside, you'll see blokes like that, fuck that, I can't be arsed.
Yeah.
And they'll, but then you've also got to be able to navigate, that's the first test, and then you've got to be a bit robust to withstand running over hills all the time and carrying weight. If you pick up a niggling injury, what does that do to your headspace? Because niggling injuries play on your mind. Can you push through that? Does it become a bigger injury? Are you prone to injury anyway, which means you're going to be fucked? You know, it's like playing sport.
Yeah.
If you know, you get all these amazing people who are talented, but you find that some of them are injury prone. Do you know what I mean? They're just whatever. So there's a bit of that. That's what the first one is. The second, the jungle, you know, like you mentioned, that's about being happy with being uncomfortable. Mm. And also, yeah, you've got to be good with regard to skill, and you know, you've got to be tactically aware, but you know, most soldiers should be. But a lot of it is about being constantly under the microscope, so you're being watched and listened to all the time. You don't know when they're not listening.
Okay,
so you'll be fucking sat chatting to your, like in an evening when you go back to your hammock space before you get your head down, you'll be fucking cooking your fucking dinner, like a bag of fucking corned beef hash or whatever. You'll be chatting to the lads, you know, the guys that are in your patrol, your team, whatever you want to call them, about anything. And because, you know, you're on a course, you'll be moaning about a couple of the other blokes.
Yeah.
You'll be fucking slagging off one of the DS because he's bollocked you or something. And then as you're fucking chatting, that DS will probably pop out from behind a bush like that. You all right, lads? You like that? Yeah. And then he just... interesting conversation, then walks off, and you're like, what were we saying? What did you reckon he heard when we called him a dit in like all this?
Yeah,
and it's
Oh
my god, it's like, and then because people do that, some people are like, fuck it, I failed, I'll take myself off, but actually, he probably was only there for 2 seconds.
A couple of seconds.
Who knows? Yeah. But
there must be a lot of mind games going on in there.
I think the mind games, they don't need to play them. They just naturally occur.
Okay.
You'll make a mistake on something, you'll get a bollocking, and it will play on your mind. But I think realistically, they just want to see you come back from that and go again.
Mm.
But the mind, they're not. It's not a conscious thing where they're like, let's fuck them up.
Yeah.
They don't need to. The jungle does that to you anyway, just living in that environment.
Are they screaming and shouting at you like they do on the TV program or not?
There's none
okay,
of that.
Okay.
Nah, that's the thing.
Okay.
That's the bit that I find hard with the TV program. Yeah. Like, literally, it's like, shout at them coming up the hill. I'm like, I couldn't give a fuck if they. I'm like that. Oh, yeah, bastards. And really, I'm like, fucking stay down there if you want. I'll fucking mug you off.
Quality.
Because they never really, unless. Yeah. You know, don't get me wrong, if someone does something ridiculous, and they don't shout, it's that. Right, if that's what you want to do, start banging out press-ups. Yeah. It'll take you for a beach run, and you're like that.
Oh,
because they don't get angry, you're like that.
Okay, yeah. How many people can you remember that went on that selection, and how many people actually passed, roughly?
So ours was quite a big one. They went through a phase of loading it up. I'm sure it was around 350 blokes. Huge course. And at the end, eight, maybe. I can never remember how many we actually, but it was less than 10.
Wow.
More than 6.
Wow.
So let's go for 8. Could have been 9.
Call it 8.
I've forgotten. Who was on it? Do you know what? I went to one of my, I'm jumping ahead, but I went to one of my gigs the other day.
Yeah.
It was in Dudley.
Yeah.
And I come out the back and this two guys come up to me. Yeah, mate, how's it going? And one of them was that. Pointing at this bloke, I'm like, you're right. So he fucking pointed the bloke for. And then I looked at the bloke, I was like, fuck me, I was on selection with him. Right? We went two different ways. He went up the road and I was like, hey, man, that's okay. I ain't seen him since selection, like fucking 20 or 20,
what year,
20 years.
What year
ago.
Did you get selected?
Went on 2002.
What's that feeling like once you've been selected? You actually, they come back.
02, 03, yeah. And, yeah.
Are you on some sort of parade? How does it work? Or is it just done? You're selected. Well done. You're in. Off you go.
Well, you get to the end of the course. Well, you get to a certain point, they're like, you know, you're going to pass unless you fucking make an absolute hash of something. And then you have a badging day where you just, there's 8 of you.
Yeah.
You're like, well done. Shake your hand. Good effort. And you're like, you're all excited. And then you're like, all right.
Is that it?
And you're like, because you're like, fuck you, we're the dog's bollocks from past selection. Then you go and join a squadron and come back down to earth with a fucking almighty crash.
Where did you go? So when you passed selection, what was the movement like? Did you move to a different area? Or did you go straight into Poole?
No, I came to Poole.
Straight into Poole?
Yeah. Mrs. was already here.
Yeah. So the first one or second one?
First one. Met her down here.
Yeah.
So we came down here, yeah. We get a married quarter. Yeah, got a married quarter.
Which means what's that, a house on campus?
A house, not on campus. The army do houses on campus.
Okay.
As fortunately, just off camp. You could see the wire.
Yeah.
It might as well have been on camp.
What was day-to-day like for you in the special boat service?
It depends. It's like hectic. Never at home. Even when you're not away, you're away doing training different roles and commitments, and you're very rarely in your own bed. If you are at home, you'd be, doing all you get, like every now and again you get something called kit husbandry weeks where you get to, clean your weapons, make sure your kit's in good order, all that sort of stuff, what people would consider mundane.
Yeah.
But, get around you have vehicles that you're responsible for.
Are you waiting on a pager? Have you got a pager or a mobile phone or something pings to go, right, something's an operation that needs to be done?
We used to at certain periods, you'd have a pager. It's been a while since I left. I'd be fucking surprised if they've got pagers. Mm. Like the enemy don't need to worry if we've got pages. Yeah. We're relying on pagers. hopefully everything's done by phone.
What was the first operation you went to, the first tour you went on?
My one was that 9-monther to Afghan.
And what was that like?
Exciting.
What year was it?
03.
Was it 04?
04.
Was it okay?
04, 05, into that. Yeah, that period.
What was the feeling like knowing you've built up, you've passed, you're now in the special forces, and now you've been flown into Afghan with like a bunch of your mates all looking after each other?
Yeah, I mean, I was excited. I was fucking, remember flying in, looking out the window of the aircraft, thinking, seeing all the mountains. I was like, ooh. Excited, apprehensive, unsure, didn't know what it was going to be like, didn't know what I was going to be like. And yeah, it was everything I wanted it to be. It was fucking exciting. We were working with like local, you know, troops, forces, and going out on the ground and just doing what I wanted to do. Mm. But for real, it was really exciting. Yeah.
Did you work alongside a good mate of ours, Stairs?
Yeah, not at the beginning.
Yeah.
That was so I remember I went out on one of our trips, and the group that I was in, we were taken over from the group that he was in. That was the first time I met him.
Yeah.
And I actually remember it quite vividly. On his trip, he ended up had a training partner that I was good mates with. Mm. So I fucking come out and I'm like, hey, mate. He's like, yeah, we'll go down. So the first thing I did with Stas was go down the gym and fucking throw some tin around. Yeah. So that was, yeah.
Was there an operation that springs out in your mind where you were like, you know what, it's either them or us, or I could be really close to losing my life here?
Well, there was a lot of those, but the one that really, without giving too much away, the one that really sticks out in my mind was towards the end of my career when I've spoken about it before, but we ran off the back of a helicopter. There's a few, like, groups, couple, numerous helicopters, ran off the back of the helicopter. One of the lads got from another heli, from another team, got shot and killed immediately. We're in, like, there's bullets flying all over the place. I'm running towards the, you know, where we're heading, a group of buildings, fucking in the zone, dived into a ditch to sort of square myself away, and then was just suddenly fucking overwhelmed with fear and thinking, what the fuck is this all about? And the weird thing is been in situations like it before, but for some reason it was in that moment that fear had gotten a grip of me, and I had to get myself out of it, and I obviously did, but it really had an impact on me, and I don't know why it was then. I don't know. Why didn't it happen before on all the other trips that I'd done out to that part of the world and all the other times that we'd been in dangerous situations? But it springs out. I don't know whether it's because we'd heard that someone had been killed, so there was a lot of emotion running around, and I was still struggling with trying to work out in my mind who it might be. I kept thinking it was one of the lads that I'd got close to. And
oh, so you didn't know?
No, we just heard that there was a guy at KIA killed in action.
Yeah.
And you're still getting your, we still had a job to do, and it's like, fucking hell, have we bitten off more than we can chew it? Which we sort of maybe had, but we squared it away in the end. But it was, yeah, I was like, I went through a wave of emotions on that evening. I remember thinking about my daughter, who was young, who I hadn't really put a lot of time and effort into, if I'm being brutally honest. Yeah. I hadn't been as present as I should have been, but that's because I was in a career that I loved. And then all of a sudden I'm in the thick of it. It's funny, I went through two things. I went through a moment where I was thinking about my mum, as much as I love my mum. She fucking talks for Britain and so can potentially do my head in at times.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, I'm thinking about my daughter, and I'm like, I shouldn't be thinking about this shit. I'm supposed to be a professional soldier, but it was just a natural thing. But then I think that trip away, that tour, was the final nail in the coffin for my mental health. It was an accumulation of stuff. There was a lot of stresses, and my home life was falling apart. Right. And I think that trying to juggle it all was too much for my brain.
Mm.
And I ended up fucking coming back from that feeling different. Didn't really, I hadn't come home to a home. I'd come home to a very fractious environment because, you know, me and the missus weren't together. I had like fucking relationships all over the place. I was going on the piss a lot downtown. It's awesome. Aruba.
Yeah, Aruba, quality.
Great. Yeah, mate.
Friday,
great.
Saturday
back
night.
In the day.
Yeah,
is it still
absolutely.
Going?
It's still going, in fact. Yeah.
Fucking hell. Is it still popular?
Yeah.
Is it decent?
Yeah, it's good, mate.
Oh, mate.
Good
yeah,
mate of mine owns it, Andy Price.
Oh, right. I had a great time in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucking loved
it. That's
some
great places going on the piss down here.
Is it still going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, mate, I was coming home and just.
Just going straight out.
Yeah.
What year was this when you realised that you on that tour you had the fear and everything else going on with your mum and your daughter? And
2010. Yeah.
On that tour there, what did you actually, on that tour, and you're talking about being in the ditch, squaring yourself off and had to get rid of a few people. What was that about? Do you remember what that mission was?
It's just another mission.
Just another one.
Yeah,
okay.
Just another. They all fucking, mate, to be fair, they... When I think back on it, I get a lot of things mixed up. I have to sit down and concentrate if I want to.
Yeah.
Not that I ever want to, but they all blend into one.
Mm.
I don't know whether anyone else thinks the same. I think, mate, I speak to a couple of mates and I think they do. But yeah, it all, for me, it's all blended into one. And obviously, having gone through, so post that tour and then, you know, over a very slow period and then quickly going into my bout of mental health, it's turned everything into a fucking
blur.
Into a blur.
Has it? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I can pick out things that have gone on and happened, but I can't fucking, I'm like, did that happen at the same time as that? Was it on the same tour? Was it?
Yeah.
It's really, yeah, it's difficult. Yeah. Difficult to try and
piece it all together.
Yeah.
Do you remember how many tours you've been on? How many Afghans? How many Iraqs?
I'd have to sit down and think properly.
Roughly, like
but
an
Iraq
Afghan.
But Iraq I didn't go to anyway.
You didn't go?
No, it was all
so just purely
all
Afghan, was
yeah,
it?
And for me.
What, 3-4 times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was more, yeah, yeah. Multiple.
How do you know when someone is a Taliban or just a farmer?
Well, you don't, unless he's got a gun. But even then, you know, it's all fucking... That was the difficulty of that era, I think.
Mm.
The environment was very difficult to... It wasn't like a what people would class as a conventional war or conflict, because there's not a state with an army that have got a specific uniform.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's done that way anymore anyway. It would be, you know, I'm sure, yeah, there's issued kit, and there's kit that you can say is attributed to certain states and their armies and their, you know, their fighting forces. But then it was very much an unknown. You're going into an area and you just don't know who's the enemy.
That must be weird, not knowing. They know who you are,
yeah,
but you haven't got a clue if that's a farmer or it's a farmer's kid or that's a Taliban with a gun hidden underneath his.
Yeah, it was. I think it was it weird. Maybe it was weird. But and then you get used to it and you're like, okay, this is what it is. We've got to be very methodical and careful about what we do, because otherwise we're going to end up having a negative impact. I was very, very aware of what we were up to and made sure that I was diligent with what my head's was, where my brain was going.
Okay.
Like, so my mental health never came from doing or being involved in shit. I think it just came from an accumulation of stressful situations, feeling like I'd nearly caught it up a few times, mates either dying or getting seriously injured and being like, fucking hell. And then having a home life that was, through my own fault, was falling apart.
Mm.
So there was no stability. That was the issue, I think. And I think if people have not got a stable
home
life, I think they're going to be maybe more susceptible to struggling. I'm not saying they will be, because I still know other guys that have, you know, not necessarily had a stable platform back home, but still managed to get on with it. But
how do you deal with, like, your first kill or the kills that had happened? Are you very much like, is it him or me?
See, I don't like, because so people ask me, oh, what guns you use and all this sort of stuff, and I'm like, I don't give a shit about that. It's just like, that's a tool to the work that I do. I enjoy being a soldier, as in the pride I've got from being able to grizz through tough times. I like the art of being a special forces soldier, you know, using the ground to your advantage and understanding tactics. Yeah. But when it came to like all the, what I say is the sort of negative side to it, which is, you know, you are involved in war fighting, which means to get the upper hand and get advantage over the enemy. You're involved in sort of death and, you know, ultimately extreme violence. Mm. But that's just a byproduct. And I'd never think about it like that.
Mm.
I don't think about what I've got up to and dwell on it. And I don't want to.
Yeah.
I've dealt with all that. And, you know, when you're involved in a firefight, it's weird because you become excited. It's adrenaline fueled. The adrenaline kicks in. And then once it's over and you get back to reasonable safety, there's a come down.
Yeah.
Where you're like, ooh, feel a bit flat. And then the opportunity comes around again. So I don't think now, after I've gone through my journey with mental health, that there's no point me going back and revisiting that stuff because it's done.
Yeah.
And I've, yeah.
How's your mental health been then after that tour when you came home and you had a reality check of probably seeing your daughter, seeing your wife, realize what's going on tour? How was that for you? How did you deal with it? Because what we're talking here, 2010, you know, there wasn't people on the internet talking about this sort of stuff. It wasn't an open book of, you know, especially the culture we're from. It's like, sort yourself out, crack on with it. What are you doing? Man up. It was kind of that attitude.
I didn't. I don't think I did deal with it. I remember coming back off a tour later on. We'd gone out we'd done a job. We got whacked by an IED on the way out. Somebody coming.
A bomb.
So it wasn't a bad one. Yeah. We still don't know what it was. It was like a partial detonation or something. A couple of lads got blown onto their asses and that was it, you know, lucky.
Mm.
And literally about 15 hours after that, I was walking down Poole High Street shopping and it was like grey, raining. I can remember it being miserable and I was like, and I had this weird out of body experience. I probably didn't then, but when I think back on it, I had this weird thing where I was looking at myself going, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what is this all about?
Yeah.
You've come home to this. And, you know, Poole High Street back then, it wasn't
the best.
If you're not feeling great about yourself, don't go to Poole High Street.
Don't pick Oxford or something.
Don't go to a fucking... There's a few places we can rattle out. Luton,
Poole High Street.
Don't go
there. It was like Star Wars down there.
You're feeling low. And I think that was the beginning of my... Oh, shit, what's going on here?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't conscious then. Then I went for, you know, still in the military, doing work, all that sort of stuff. And then I remember finding it hard to dig deep to motivate myself. We're getting ready to go away again.
Stress.
And I was like, fuck am I doing? Like, I was, you know, leading guys now, you know, and I'm like, fucking hell, this isn't fair on these lads, let alone myself. So I sort of presented to, there was a psych department, very small, and I went in there like under cover of fucking darkness, almost, you know, fucking hell. Went in there, I was like, look, I'm feeling like this, let me know what I need to do so I can crack on. I was literally like, I didn't say it like that, but then it went, you know, the conversation was longer, but I was like, just tell me what I need to do so I can get my mojo back.
Yeah,
I just want to get. And they were like, okay, yeah, you know, is this what you're feeling, blah blah blah. And I was like, yeah, fine, I've got to go. Then they said, I'll come back again. I said, keep this off the record. I don't want anyone knowing because otherwise that's going to fuck my career up.
What, a sign of weakness?
Yeah, I think so. I just didn't want anyone knowing. Anyway, kept going back to see that person. And they're like, look, we've been having a few chats now. There's something going on. And we need to, there's got to be some things that give now for you to start. We need space to help you to get back on track.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to tell the relevant people. And I'm like, fucking hell. I was like, okay, yeah, fine, if that's what you think. So they go and get into, then it's like, okay, Foxy's got an issue. And then I got signed off work and then I felt bad there. I wasn't coming into work.
Did the boys know by this point?
Yeah, I think they did, but I pretended to myself they didn't. Okay. I kept telling, if I did see anyone, it was like, oh yeah, my earring's fucked.
Yeah, okay.
All that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, I'm sort of seeing psychs and that more different establishments within the Navy. So I'm going to a naval establishment and sitting down with their psych department, or in their psych department with a psychologist, and they're saying, right, this is what you've got. You've got PTSD, you've got fucking burnt, you're burnt out and you're mildly depressed. Here's some drugs for the depression, which I was like, okay. So took that away. And they kept saying, we're going to have to, you know, the thing that's going to fix you is to leave the military. And I was like, no, I don't want to leave the military. I ain't got fucking... So that kept going on. I was, mate, fucking antidepressants knocked me out. I was like, fuck that. I took them for a bit, but I was like, I can't do it. Because it just literally for 2 days after taking something, I couldn't talk to anyone. It was like ridiculous. So I ended up, went on holiday with my family at the time. And I was a miserable bastard to be around. It was terrible. I was a terrible person to be around. Not in any way, you know, not physically terrible. I was just a fucking miserable bastard. I came back from that holiday and I could see the impact that it had had on people. And I was like, right, okay, maybe I need to start the ball rolling with this medical discharge. So I went in and I said, look, you're obviously right. Let's start the ball rolling. And it was a very quick transition. They're like, okay, fine, paperwork done. Fill out this, go and see this person. Go down to your med boards. You go down to it was in near Portsmouth. You go into a room in your suit. There's like fucking high ranking officers. You sit down for a nice room. And they're like, blah, blah, blah. This is who you are. This is what's happened. And we now recommend you that you are now medically discharged, and your last date that happened in something like say that was towards the end of Feb, maybe.
And what year?
2012.
Okay.
And they're like, so your TX date, that's the date, your transmission date, they fucking transmit you out, is the 5th of April 2012. So I was like, okay, fine. So I sort of like got out of that room. I had a van at the time, got in the back of the van, got out of the suit, got me jeans and t-shirt. I was like, oof, fucking maybe that's it now. It's all good. And
did you feel good when you left there at that moment?
No, because I felt like there's a new chapter.
Yeah, new chapter, so civvy,
like,
life.
Okay, yeah. So civvy life, I was still getting paid up until whenever. So I was like, okay, it's cool.
How long did you get paid for when you left? Is it like a year they give you or anything like that?
Nah, it's a bit. I got a medical pension, so I get a lump sum. So that was coming. And then I get a very meager pension, but it's better than nothing. So I was like, okay, this is cool. And then fast forward a few weeks and I wait. So April the 5th comes. So that's my last day. I wasn't at camp or anything. I didn't go. I was like, it's my last day. I had a few beers. And then woke up on the 6th of April and fucking felt terrible. I was like, shit, I'm not part of it now.
Yeah.
It's actually real. It's like, and that's when everything spiraled out of control, when I was just fucking thought I'd failed at stuff. Family life was falling fucking, was, by this stage I'm into another relationship.
Yeah.
And and then sort of basically found myself on top of a cliff because I was like fucking, thought I'd failed at everything. And I remember having a meltdown and I'd had another argument, fucking standard. I was like, well, I've failed at, I've been good at something. It's that it's bitten me in the arse. I've been told that this is the best thing for me. I've come out. It's not been the best thing for me. I've obviously, my time here is done. That's the way I saw it. I was like, I'm not helping anyone else. I'm causing them. I'm having a nightmare at home.
Yeah.
I'm a nightmare to them fuckers. So I might as well. So I remember being on, stood up there like that. Right, this is obviously the moment. And then I was like, hang on a minute. Fucking, first of all, I'm probably shit scared of dying.
Yeah.
And maybe I was there thinking, let's not be so brash. But I stood up there thinking to myself, right, if I do, I've got to do something about this.
So you stood up there thinking, well, I want to take my own life now.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I either do that or what do I do to not do that, as in there's something as to, and as I've got to change a lot of things. I've got to be honest with myself for a start and, you know, remove myself from, got to be careful what I say. just relationships that were unhelpful for me personally.
And do you think that was you or the other half of the relationship? Or a bit of combo?
I think it's both. Combo, I mean, okay. I'll take the rap on all things that I've done because I've fucked up. But the one thing I've learned, there's never one side,
two to ten,
as much as some people will. Yeah. But yeah, there was, yeah.
What was the moment when you're up there going, you know what, I'm not going to do this?
Probably because I don't like heights and I could have picked a better fucking way of doing it. I'm like that. Fucking hell.
Get me off here.
What was I thinking?
Little balls are tingling.
I know, yeah. Fucking, where's the hose pipe? joking aside, would I have done it? I'd done it. Well, I didn't, thank fuck. I think it was a little, maybe it was a bit of a process I had to go through. Okay. Maybe it was the only way, maybe subconsciously I knew I had to fucking stare something. Yeah. At it to get myself kicked up the arse. Mm. I used to be, not anymore, but I used to be someone that really needed a kick up the arse sometimes as a kid at school. You know, I didn't do well at school. That's because I needed a kick up the arse. Yeah. I think that was my last kick up the arse. I think after that, I was like, you don't get to the point where you need a kick up the arse. I think there was a lot of things that went on that cliff. Actually, I never not thought of it this way ever. The fact that it was that I've always needed that kick up the arse, even though I've had the motivation, you know, the ability to join the special forces and be in it and be self-motivated. But the motivation comes from you're doing a job.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, you must be so disciplined. I'm like, am I? I had to do the job anyway. If I didn't, I'd have got bollocked, kicked out and don't get paid. So there's your motivation. Whereas when you're outside and you're dealing with your own mental health, there isn't, you've got to be disciplined. Mm. And that moment on the cliff was like, you've got to fucking sort your discipline out, mate. I think that's maybe what it was.
Did you feel completely lost at that point?
Yeah, I was fucking having a mare. I was like fucking constantly fucking crying in my car.
Yeah.
Just having a fucking meltdown. Like, fucking hell, what's happened? Like, just, I was always hitting the self-destruct button. I had a fucking, I've got rid of that now.
What, get on the smash and just trying to
whatever. Just, I don't know whether that, because that's another thing. It's like, does that come from being guilty about, is it a survivor guilt thing? I don't think so. I don't think I ever struggled with that. I think it was just maybe sometimes people don't think they deserve good shit.
Yeah. Is that how you felt at the time?
I think so. Mm. I think so. I'd always try and, you know, things were like going all right. I'd be like, there's a red button.
Yeah.
Let's see what this does.
See what happens.
This could be fun. Oh, fucking hell. We're back in the mixer. I'll taped it up. Fuck off.
Well, how would you deal with that sort of stuff at that time? Were you putting on a front that everything's okay, but deep down crying, going away and dealing with your own emotions? Was there anyone you could actually speak to at that time who you relied on?
I found.
As a confidant.
So. There was a few things that fucking snapped me out of it. The main one being that thing. There was one, I was working in a restaurant at the time, and it's in a seaside town. The majority of people that worked in that restaurant were fucking on their holidays from university.
Yeah.
Young, you know, 20-somethings. Mm. I can remember fucking, I didn't even know, but there's this, I was behind the counter. This fucking 20-year-old girl's like that. Fuck, Jason, are you all right? I'm like, yeah. What? What's the matter? She goes, you've just been staring into space for fucking, like, you're not even here. And I was like, fucking hell. For 20-year-old kids fucking seeing that, and I was like, so there was little bits going on like that. Didn't speak to any of the lads because I felt embarrassed. Ended up getting a job for a corporate business. Fucking hell. I got a job for a corporate business and the guy. So what happened was I'm going all over the place. Sorry, lads.
It's good,
I basically met this guy who was high up in businesses, and he was basically running globally this facilities management company called Sodexo. And he was like, I met him at a dinner party. He goes, what are you up to now? And he knew my background. And I was like, do you know what? I don't know. I'm lost.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. He goes, oh, I'll speak to a few people. Anyway, he had a guy that was an one of his M. So he was globally responsible for a business that was huge. And there were segments within it. And he'd introduced me to one of the, they were called MDs, but the blokes are CEOs of fucking segments. And this guy ran the UK's, well, actually it was wider than that, but it was the UK's Ministry of Defence contract, which was fucking enormous for them. Guy was called Andy, lives down here, lives now. And he was a years ago, used to be a naval officer, left, got into facilities management, did really well. It was awesome, blew it. And I met him. He was, his offices at the time were up in Aldershot, and he's like, "You, hi, how's it going? You know, Phil says blah, blah, blah." And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." He said, you got your CV? I was like, "Yeah." Give him that. I'd never been given any, I'd never been taught how to write a CV.
Yeah.
Give him that. And he's just like, "Fucking hell." It's like written in red crayon. It's like that. "Yeah, my name's Foxy. I was in the Marines, went to war, come home." He's like, "Mate," he goes, "leave this with me." And like, I owe a lot to that guy.
Yeah.
I need to fucking phone him actually today and say I'm down to try and see him at some point. Anyway, I'm fucking mad where we go. So he's like, "Leave that with me." He's like, "Right, okay, blah, blah, blah." He goes, I'll get this rewritten for you." And I think he spent his own money.
Yeah.
He gave it to someone he knew that wrote CVs, sent it back to me. And he goes, "What do you think?" And I'm like, "Who's this? Fucking hell. You want to employ this bloke?" And he's like, "That's you twat." And I'm like, "Oh, right, okay." He's like, "Right." He goes, "I'm going to give you a job." He said, "It isn't going to be the job for you. I don't see you doing it for a long time. I don't know. But just take it for what it is." And he'd give me a job as a projects manager where I could just shadow people within the business. I had a company car.
Brilliant.
I was like, fucking hell. And it was all right. It was a good job, mate. But it just wasn't me.
Yeah.
And I was fucking pressing that red button every fucking day over and over again.
Mm.
And I was a headache to people because I wasn't, you know, I had access to nearly every military base that was on their contract. And all I was doing was going on board onto a base and using the gym.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm down at the, with the drivers, seeing how they're getting on." Like fucking benching. Like fucking just, you know. It just went fucking, it went sideways. I was causing, I ended up having an accident in the car. I got caught speeding and they were like, "Right, we got to put a tracker on the car. Otherwise, you don't get a car."
Yeah.
The company's insurance said, "Take the car away from him or you put a tracker on." I'm like, "Are you fucking joking?" So they're like, "Yeah, it's okay, fine. Have you tried driving by the speed limit around the country?" It is fuck. I had old women tooting at me because I was like, "Fucking road hog." Fucking hell. I was getting bollocked all the time because where the beacon on my car thought the speed limit starts are different to where the signage is.
Yeah.
So I kept getting in the shit and I'm like, "Your fucking beacon's wrong. Our technology's not wrong." And I got so obsessed, I was going around and taking pictures of where a 30 started and where, like, literally, it made us so. In the end, I was causing so much trouble for this guy. I remember there was an awards evening in London for the business. And I, fuck knows how I got invited to go, but I got invited to go probably because of Andy. And I saw him in the bar. It's packed, the bar in the hotel that we were all staying at. And I went up to him and he was just laughing. He goes, "Mate, how's it going?" I says, "Oh," he goes, "I know." He goes, I keep a fucking close eye on you." And I was like, "Mate, I tell you what," I says, "I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to leave." I said, "I'm going to leave."
Yeah.
"Because this is too much of a headache for you. You've got a business to run." And he's like, "Mate, don't leave." He goes, "I'll make you redundant." And I wasn't even entitled to a redundancy package. And he also...
What a good bloke.
Well, before then...
Do you get a nice payout as well?
For who I was. But before then, I met up with him again at some... It was at a works gathering. And I ended up meeting up with him for... Like, some people didn't like the fact that I knew him.
Yeah, okay.
Sort of was a bit, that was another
jealousy
thing.
Jealousy type thing.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Why is he fucking getting to speak to Andy? And
yeah.
He'd come over and he's like, "How are you doing?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm all good." He goes, "Mate, I can see you're not that good." This is when I was going through my whole... I think it was around the same sort of time I was doing my fucking stood on a cliff thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Mate, I can see you're not good." He goes, "Let me help you." He goes, I've got a you know, my the stuff that comes with my position in this business allows me to have a medical cover.
Yeah.
He says, I will get you, I'll use my medical cover for you, and we're going to go and find someone to help you. And he opened up to me a little bit about stuff that he had going on, you know, being running a business and all this.
All the pressures with it.
And he basically helped me find the person that fixed me. And so I owe him an awful lot.
Wow, sounds like a proper
man. He's fucking good guy. Really good guy.
Who was the person who introduced you to that changed your life?
No, well, there was a few, but so I went and saw one person and it fell flat on its face.
You'll know straight away, right, when you go and see someone asking the wrong questions or...
Yeah, so I went and saw one person and it fell flat on its ass. And I went back to him and I was like, mate, he said, look, we're just going to keep looking. He says, it's not going to happen straight away. And then I ended up meeting... So there was a doctor. It was Dr. Alex Toombs. Down in Totnes it was, in Devon. So I've turned up, waiting in a big clinic. There's old people everywhere, and I'm like, anyway, this young lady comes down, and she says, "Are you here to see Dr. Toombs?" And I'm like, "Yeah." She says, "Oh, come with me." So go on upstairs. She's opened the door, let me in. So I've gone in. And then she closed the door behind herself. And I'm like, you all right? And I was like, she was like, yeah. And I was like thinking, are you going to go and get fucking Alex or what? Mm. And there was this weird pause. Mm. She goes, no, I'm Dr. Toombs. Mm. And I'm like, oh. I was waiting for an old bloke. I was like, didn't realise. And she was fucking awesome.
Quality.
So we did a couple of set. Well, the funny thing is, the way I remember it is we did that one session in the clinic and I was like, I can't be doing sitting in here on a couch. Let's go outside into the woods. Apparently, that's not what happened. We did like fucking about 7 sessions over 2 months in that room before we'd worked out we were going to go walking in the woods. Mm. But it was the walking in the woods and talking to her that helped me out. But the funny thing with that is she was getting married and then moving to France. So we got to the point where she was like, right, you're done. And I'm like, what? She's like, you're fucking done. You don't need to see me anymore. And I'm like, well, no, I'm going to be seeing you all the time.
I'm like,
comfort fucking. Yeah. She's like, no, you're done. And I'm like, well, that's enlightening, but also scary. She disappears, done. She was moving. She was quite holistic. So she'd kill me. She fucking listen to this. She won't, but she'd kill me because she's like, I was like, she's a hippie.
Yeah.
She was going off to France to live in a wigwam or something. Fucking mad. And I was like, you'll never, like, literally disappeared off the face of the planet. Doesn't watch TV, fucking all that sort of stuff. Fast forward a few years and I'm sat down with the guy that I do the books with, Matt, the writer. Mm. And we're talking about this like we are now. Yeah, and he's like, where are we going to find this Dr. Alex Toombs? I'm like, mate, you'll never find her. She's disappeared off the face of the planet, living off the planet. And he's like, all right, okay. Next day, fucking... message me, he goes, is this her? He sent me a screenshot and it's like a website and I was like, well, it's a different last name. But I was like, and for months I've been telling him, we're never going to find her. We're never going to find her. And he's like, well, there's a number. Can you try it? So I'm like, okay. So I've typed the number into my phone, press send. It's the same fucking number I had for her. And I'm like, hello? She goes, hello? And I'm like, is that Alex? Yeah. I'm like, oh, right. It's like, I was supposed to be special forces. It's like, you twat. You've had a number in your phone the whole time. For like literally 6 months, I was telling him that. There's no point. We'll never find her. But that's when getting back in touch with her. Because normally you don't ever get back in touch.
Yeah.
What was it for?
Really, she spoke to. Was it you finding the right person to speak to, where there was no one judging, or did you just let everything out to this woman?
Yeah. I spoke about all sorts of shit. I don't know. Again, it was all a bit blurry, but it was very deep. But again, the only people that fix people is themselves.
Yeah,
you just need someone there to go down guide. That path. Go down that way. That's what she did. She's very good. Still, she's...
So anyone listening out there who's feeling like you were feeling, what would your advice be?
So if you've got to go on the journey, which is to talk, to people. You'll get despondent. It is an up and down journey, and you'll feel despondent if you meet someone that isn't right for you. But that should be exciting, because it's just you're just learning something about who you are. You're just learning that that's someone I don't connect with. It's not an issue. There's billions of people on the planet. Of course, we're not going to connect with them all, and you're just going to go out and find another one.
Yeah,
that's all. Don't lose faith at the first hurdle.
Mm.
Because ultimately, that's not the way it works. You're very few and far between where you find someone that was lucky enough to find the right person first off. But the more you speak about stuff, you know, you go on that journey. If you're in a bad and low place, if you commit to the journey and you're honest with yourself, that's what you've got to be. You've got to be honest with yourself. You'll come out of it a better version of you. Fact.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that. So that's an exciting thing to look forward
absolutely.
To.
Do you find that alcohol got in the way for you?
I mean, I've never been that bad with alcohol. I can fancy myself as a bit of a boozer.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and I was probably at a point in my life where I was drinking too much.
What, like binge drinking?
No.
Or daily?
I got to the point where I was coming home from whatever I was doing and bosh, fucking a lot of red wine.
Yeah.
But I was very functional on it. I mean, not at the time. I'd fucking pass out, but I'd go to sleep, wake up and I'm like, good to go.
Yeah.
And I was drinking a lot like that. And that didn't help, you know. Mm. I was doing that when I was still in the military, you know, living on my own, split up from the missus. I mean, when we split up, I kept hold of the married quarter, which wasn't helpful. So I lived in a married quarter as a single bloke.
With the memories still?
Yeah, yeah, with memories and just leading a bit of a single person. I think the rest of the women on the married quarters fucking didn't like me. So I was just like, wait! All the fucking other lads are like, oh, now he's having a good time. Yeah. I wasn't really. Obviously, I'm just fucking bouncing around as a single bloke. Yeah. But yeah, and I was like, I had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. I feel I've got a healthy one now. I spend most of the year off booze, dabbling it at Christmas and whatnot.
Yeah, same. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm,
isn't it nice to wake up feeling clean?
I've become addicted to the clean feeling.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
I hear you.
Sound like a couple of old bands.
I know we do, but we're kind of, that's, we've been through it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sick of that. Even now, if I have a drink, I'm like,
how am I going to feel tomorrow?
Yeah.
I don't want to feel like that.
And I used to really, really love the drink.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I can drink it. And I'm like, don't love it like I used to.
Yeah, same.
I can take or leave it.
Mm. I find it quite empowering to say no.
Yeah. I was at a works dinner last night and it was being paid for by the work side of things. And they're like, come on, you can have what you want.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no. And it's funny because you watch everyone else going, but why? I was going to have one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, feel free. I'm like, I'd love you to have one. I don't care. Mm. But they're like, It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Because if you're not, people who don't take drugs, people will go, okay, don't take drugs, fair enough, let him be. But if you say, I'm not having a drink, like, mate, what do you mean you're not having a drink?
Bonkers.
It's bonkers, isn't it? It's the only drug in the world that people get upset that you're not having.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? You want me to get fucked up with you?
Yeah. But roll back years ago, we'd been the same. Go, well, you're all about not having a drink. Tuck in.
I've done it.
Yeah.
You
big fanny, exactly.
What was
the movement after that then? How long were you dealing with PTSD, would you say, until you actually broke into the sort of the TV world?
So obviously there's got to be, still dealing with it when I broke into that.
Yeah.
There was lots of different things that had to fall into place before I was fully over it, I'd say. A lot of people say you could never get over it. I disagree. It's just you learn how to move on with your life.
Yeah.
And if you want it to be a problem, it will be a problem. If you don't want it to be a problem, it won't. That said, I'll never say never. There's always going to be something that could trip you up.
Yeah.
And if you think like that, then you'll be ready for it, I hope.
Yeah.
But for me, I think, you know, I was starting to struggle with my mental health in 2009.
Yeah.
No. Must have been before that. You know, I'd genuinely say I was starting to struggle with my health in 2006 after the breakup of my marriage.
And so you had a 6-year dealing with that, but only really dealing with it for the final 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. But obviously, I didn't know that. I was just like, whatever. If you look at where everything was condensed, like all the fucking lines in my life, you had like my career, going away on tours, arguments with the missus, kid born sick, car breaks down. That's where it fucking snapped.
Yeah.
So that would have been like 2006, really.
Yeah.
And then it just keeps building. Then there's that point in, must have been 2013, the cliff. Then 14, I'm fucking like a waif and stray, bouncing around mates' fucking sofas.
Yeah.
15, not dissimilar. Relationships fucking... 13, 14 relationships all over the place. Probably not very dysfunctional. Then 15, things started to change. So I'd had a really good stint with Alex.
Yeah.
Things were coming good there.
Second wife. Oh no, sorry, long. Alex, the while you work
Alex,
with
the yeah, doctor. The
doctor, yeah, okay.
I set up an organization, Rock to Recovery, with Jamie. There was a guy there called Malcolm. He was, again, I actually do disservice here because Malcolm was just as good as Alex.
Okay.
But different ways. So I had two different people that I was chatting to. And then in the early 15, one of my best mates, Aldo, who used to be in the Marines, you know, I was fucking struggling for work at the time. So I'd left that job, the small pot of money that Andy was kind enough to fucking hook me up with was drying out rapidly.
Yeah.
And I went and did a job with Aldo actually down at Southampton Uni. We were stunt rigging and they've got a wind tunnel there.
Yeah.
And stunt rigged something for BBC and we had a laugh again. And then a few weeks after that, he's like, mate, I got a job out in Madagascar working for a production crew out there. Can you do it? You'd be the team medic and the underwater cameraman, dive buddy.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So I went out and that was the first fucking building block really for my proper recovery. So I'd done all the theory.
Yeah.
And then I needed to start
putting into action.
Like positive, like thinking positively. Like I'm a big believer in if you think positively, like properly positive, not fucking wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Just keep thinking I'm in a good place. I'm going to do good things. I want to do good things. Yeah, I don't think you need to be genuine, particularly specific. You probably could be, but good things. Yeah, I think you attract, a positive attitude attracts positive behaviors, positive action.
Your word is your wand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And these things started to happen. So I did that, did a good job, had a good time, didn't moan on it, just got on with it. And then off that, SAS, before it was SAS, came about. And I was like, I'm denied about it. Don't get me wrong. It's fucking a very controversial decision.
What, for you personally?
For me personally and for the people I know that it would impact, as in the group.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, this is an opportunity. I can't, I've got a mental health brand, I'm fucking typecast as someone with PTSD. I can't get a job in security because I can't get a big job in security. Can't go away and use weapons because everyone's like, oh, he's fucking mad. And so I'm like, what can I do? It's like having a degree and never been able to use it.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity. And I was like, I don't fucking agree with it, but it sounds really good. So I was like, fuck it, do it. I had a mate of mine at the time. He was like, mate, if you don't do it, someone else will.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
So I went in, did it. And then that's, yeah.
So that was in 2016?
2015. Still. So I came back from Madagascar and literally bounced into doing SAS.
Yeah.
Who? Then after SAS, went and did Road Across the Atlantic, which was another, positive nail in a coffin. Yeah. My chariot to becoming to getting myself into a better
who
place.
Approached you for SAS? The Channel 4 of SAS, He Who Dares.
SAS Who Dares wins.
Who dares, Rodney?
This time next year, Rodney.
We're millionaires. Old Del Boy and Rodders will be happy with that. Shout out to those boys. Channel 4 SAS. Who Dares wins. Who approached you?
I got a phone call off a guy called Andrew. And he was like, I'm an assistant producer for this company, production company, and we're working on a project for Channel 4. Can we talk to you about it? And I'm like, yeah. Mate. And then we just started chatting. It sort of went along the lines of, can we condense Special Forces selection into 7 days? And I just fucking was like, fuck off, mate.
Yeah.
And then went on a little bit, conversation, started talking a bit more positively about it. I thought, and I've said this a lot of times, but I thought I was going to be an off-screen consultant. I was like, oh, this would be a nice chunk of work.
Yeah.
A bit of consultancy for TV. I did that job in Madagascar.
Telling them what to do? This is how to reenact stuff. This is the training. Okay, fair play, yeah.
And then they were like, no, we want you to be one of the fucking guys running this. And I was like, well, okay, yeah. Obviously you'll pixelate the faces and that. And they're like, no. They're like, that shit don't work anymore.
Yeah.
We want people to engage with you. And you're like, and this was their biggest hurdle. This is what they were nervous about, because they're like, are we ever going to get these guys?
Yeah.
And that's when I was starting to think about it and spoke to my mate, and he's like, mate, fucking, you should have a go, take the opportunity. So yeah, took the opportunity.
Was there any knockback for you? Did you have the fear at all of going, any of the boys looking down at you going, why is Foxy doing that?
Yeah.
We've got to keep stum. We're told to keep stum. This is our lifestyle. This is our world. You keep stum. Don't go on telly. Because you would have been the original one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you deal with that?
Thought about it. I remember having a couple of phone calls with mates of mine close to me. And I was like, I'm going to be doing something that you're going to fucking hate. And they're like, what is it? And I was like, this. And they're like, oh, what's work said? And I'm like, well, I've had a conversation. Before I even spoke to work about it, I wasn't even fucking working.
You weren't even employed with them. You were out for 4 years.
The point being is I'd been out for 3 years. And no one had ever, no one officially from work had phoned up and gone, how are you doing?
Right, okay.
And I don't expect it. Yeah. I don't expect it. How are you doing? And I'm, of course I don't expect it. I'm fucking in the big wide world. I've got to fend for myself. I'm struggling for money, work, just fucking, I have no idea what my future holds. So opportunity comes up. I take it, or I'm at least contemplating it, seriously contemplating it. I get a phone call. It's like from someone that worked in the one of the cells that looks at what people are doing outside and making sure they don't do it. And then he's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, yeah, all good. It's like, just thought I'd phone up, see how you are. Really?
Yeah.
We've heard that there's a rumour that you might be getting involved in this show that the Channel 4 are looking at doing. And I'm like, all right, yes, yeah. Your sources are good. What are you thinking of doing? I was like, well, what do you think I should do? And they're like, well, say no. I'm like, I says, well, that's all well and good, but I'm in a shit place. Yeah. I says, no one's phoned me to see how I don't want that. But the only phone call I get is to tell me to turn down work.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can't get a job as a fucking, I can't get a job in security. I couldn't go into the police. Can't get a job as a fireman because I've got fucking PTSD.
Yeah.
I'm like, what am I supposed to do? I can't do anything. He's like, well, there was no real answer. And I was like, this is an opportunity. I says, I'm not going to stitch any of the lads up. I'm not going to do that. That's not who I am. In fact, why don't I become the conduit of what's happening? I can feed you. Oh no, we couldn't officially, And I'm like, well, I'm not going to stitch you up. And I think it was like, well, I said something along the lines of what does it mean if I did do it? And they're like, well, you could get PNG'd, as in persona non grata. And I'm like,
what's that?
What does PNG that mean?
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you won't be allowed on camp. And I'm like, well, I'm not allowed on anywhere. I was like, okay, does it affect my welfare package and all this sort of thing, as in my pension? They're like, no. And I'm like, okay. I was like, look, I'm not going to, what's the process? And they're like, look, you've got to go through a process of EPOR requesting for permission to, and I'm like, okay, let's do that. I don't want to fucking wind anyone up, but there's an opportunity. And if I don't do it, someone else is going to do it.
Yeah, agree.
And I said, I'm not going to fucking, I was still very torn about doing it because I didn't agree with it.
Yeah.
I didn't agree with it, but.
But what an opportunity.
Yeah. And I also, I eventually was like, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to fucking talk about mental health. I've been told for ages by other people in different professions, don't talk about poor mental health. Fucking hell, don't let anyone know that. And I was like, but that's doing me no favours. I've tried that and it's fucking not worked.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to fucking talk about it. Anyway.
That's quality. So what was that first one? Where was that first one? Wales. Did you do a pilot first?
No. Mate, you didn't? No. They basically gone with an idea. Everyone was shitting their pants. Not us. We were
Whose fucking... idea was it originally?
Right.
Phil Campion's.
No. Was it? No. I don't. It was not. There's a guy called Alex who worked for Minnow Films. He was in development. He came up with the idea. They came up with the idea. No one else. We got approached to facilitate that idea. We got asked to go down there and could this be possible? We were consultants, if anything. And so I would say without us, there would be no show or there wouldn't be a good version of it.
Mm.
But they came up with the idea.
Okay.
The production company owned the IP.
And what was your role in that then?
In what?
In that first one in Wales. What did you have to do when they were filming you? Did you know that was going on Channel 4? Did you know your face was going to be...
We knew it was Channel 4. We knew our faces were going on it. It was an experiment. And we turned... So they had different people go on recce's. There's a couple of lads that were thinking about doing it. They went on the first recce and did a little bit of work, came back from that. Then they were like, we don't want to do it. They got cold feet.
Okay.
And fair play.
Yeah.
So I was there. I was like, right, Ollie. Yeah. In. Right.
It was Ollie Ollerton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And me and him went on a recce with the guy that pretty much came up with the idea, but worked for Minnow.
Yeah.
And a producer. Okay. We went into Wales and we looked at all the different locations that producer, who had scouted the location, was like, what do you think about this? That producer is now my wife, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's where we first met.
Quality.
She'd done all the location stuff. And we were like, yep, that works. We can do this here. Looked at different things, mapped out different routes. We were up there a week, stayed in a B&B and fucking
Basically
looked at stuff.
Mm.
And then we went and looked at Penny Fan,
yeah.
Did that. I came away from that and I was getting ready to row across the fucking North Sea. And I can remember sitting down the night before we started off rowing across the North Sea in a fucking shitty Airbnb. It wasn't even Airbnb. Shitty B&B in fucking Colchester or something.
Mm.
And I remember writing down the whole route card for fucking what the routes were that we did on that thing. So we, like me and Ollie put it all together. A bit of shift, yeah. But we didn't put it all together because that's taken a lot away from the producers and the production company. They did a fucking shitload.
But they
of
can
work.
Take it to a point when you take it to the next
point.
Yeah,
we just did that and we're like, right, bosh, yeah, there's okay. All that. And then they do all the logistics around it.
Okay.
Came back from that. And then we get him building up and going to get away. The other names got thrown in.
Who else was thrown in year one? Yourself, Ollie.
And Colin.
Okay.
The Scottish guy.
Yeah.
And so we went up there after we'd done a fucking, been on a recce. There was two guys that had been on the recce before. They'd looked at initial locations and me and Ollie went up and looked at other stuff.
Mm.
And then we all turned up and it all, and then it just fell in. We're like, oh, right, okay, we'll just get on with it.
And they were just all filmed?
Yeah.
Non-stop. Was it on Channel 4 that year one?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that feeling like for you knowing that your face is going to be on Channel 4?
Exciting but scary.
Yeah.
I knew as well because the second episode was when I started talking about my poor mental health and why I'd left the military. And it was the first time, obviously, I've spoken about it, but I haven't fucking, not on that level.
Yeah.
And it was one of the reasons why I wanted to do it in the end was to talk about it.
Mm.
And I knew it was coming in that episode and I was fucking
nervous.
24 hours before that episode, I was a twat to be around.
Yeah.
Because I was so nervous about how that would land.
Yeah.
I've been told for ages not to talk about poor mental health. It will stitch yourself up. And it was all right.
What was the knock-on effect when you actually first saw it come live and you saw yourself on the TV screen and talking about mental health? What was the positivity that came out of that?
It was good feedback.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I didn't know, actually. Not surprised. I was just relieved. Relieved.
Relieved, yeah.
Relieved. Because I was like, fucking hell, how's this going to go? I'm opening myself. It was more because it was exposing. I was like airing my dirty laundry. And actually, this is another thing I've got for people listening. It's the most empowering thing, talking about what people would consider your weaknesses. Yeah. And also, you're not having to worry about your secrets coming out because you fucking got it out there. Yeah. You're like, ah, this is who I am.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
You would have helped millions of people, you know?
Maybe.
But yeah, 100%, folks, 100%, you've helped millions of people by just going, boom, that's me. People looking up to you as like a, you know, a hero.
I hope so.
How's your journey been since that first one? Because what we now, so you did that 2015, you've just now done the 2023 one. Has it always been civilians? And when did it turn into when you're putting celebrities on?
Civilians became, so we did that one, second one in it. So that one.
So what, first one was Wales,
second one was Ecuador, third one was Morocco. And then the fourth one, we went to Chile, and the fourth one was when they were like, right, we're bringing in celebs as well. So we went out there for a long time.
Yeah.
We filmed the normal one, had a couple of days off, and then they brought the celebs out and we did a celeb one. And then since then, it's been celeb, normal celeb, normal celeb, normal celeb, up until last year when we just did celeb.
And why do you think that was? Do you think the viewing figures were more, they were more interested in celebrities than they were just civilians doing it?
So I personally don't know the full legit reasons, but I would suggest that it was money.
Yeah, okay.
The shows are great. They do a lot for people, I think. You know, they have people from lots of different backgrounds coming on, and I think that's a good thing for people watching. But ultimately, then they will look at, we're struggling for money.
Yeah.
It costs a lot to make. It's a lot.
Do you know rough numbers?
No, okay. But it's going to be, it's in the millions.
Yeah,
it's got to be.
Okay.
You're taking 100, it's 150 crew.
Is it?
Yeah. You're flying halfway around the world.
Wow, okay.
So there's a lot of money involved.
Yeah, okay.
And if that's the case, they're going to look at which one does best for them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it will be the celebrity one.
Yeah.
I think people are like, oh, why isn't the... Why haven't we got the normal one? I prefer the normal people. And it's like, well, no one's fucking watching it.
Yeah.
You might like him.
Yeah.
Watch it then.
Get the numbers up, yeah.
Yeah, but they've gone and, we did the celeb one last year, which hasn't come out yet.
Where was the celeb one you did with last in 2023 with Matt Hancock?
So we did that in 2022.
22, was it? Okay.
Yeah. That was in Vietnam.
Vietnam.
Yeah.
What was it like knowing that Matt Hancock is in your TV program, knowing all the lads knowing what he's like?
Well, we didn't know what he was like, to be fair.
A perception of what he'd done in the pandemic type thing.
We didn't know that he was coming on. They never... So here's something for people. They keep who they've got as a cast, as contestants, as recruits, whatever you want to call them, a secret from us. We'll never know who they are civilian-wise because they're just normal people, so we probably won't know who they are. The celebrity ones, they try and keep it under wraps, so it's a surprise for us because they love seeing our reaction.
Yeah.
We'll find out a little bit about who it is every now and again because you'll hear rumours. Yeah. You're like, oh, fucking heard he's like,
I hope it's him.
I'm all, like, go to my agent. Come on, you must know. Ooh, we can't tell. with that one, we'd been in Vietnam. We'd filmed the civilian one. So we've done that. We've finished. You have like about 3 days in between. You have a day off, maybe two. Then you have a day of rehearsals before, because normally it mirrors what you've just done anyways. You just need a quick sort of recap. And the days off are never really days off. You have meetings with the execs and we're talking about schedules and stuff. And they were like, this is 24 hours before we start. They're like, we need to talk to you about the recruits. And we're like, fucking hell, yeah. Full, like, you're going to tell us who can't swim, who's got an eye missing, you know, whatever. And there's always something that they have to brief you up on. Or there's a recruit that, just so you know, can't walk or something. You're like, well, we'll know that when we fucking see them, won't we? And they're like, no, there's a recruit we need to talk to you about. And we're like, all right, okay, what's the problem? They're like, well, it's a reasonably high profile person. And we're like, okay, where is it? And they're like building up. They're in politics, and we're like, fucking hell, who's this? Like, who have they managed to convince from politics? They were like, it's Matt Hancock. And we're like, fuck off. We're like, so at first, it was a weird response because we were like, looking at each other, like, and Rudy, the Americans, like, ah, who? Who the fuck is that? We're like, oh, mate, we'll brief you up in a minute. Because obviously the Yanks ain't going to know, are they? Yeah. And we're like, this is going to be good fun because that's high profile, really. Mm. And, you know, we get a chance to have a pop. Any politician, you know, it's just the way of the world.
Perfect.
Isn't it? Everyone wants to dig at a politician. Yeah. But then we were like, hang on a minute. How's this going to land? Because there's a lot of people that don't particularly like him. Mm. And we're going to be seen as giving in an opportunity for airtime. And even though the entire selection process is out of our hands, like, what are we going to say? I'm not going to work.
Yeah.
Just because you got him, I'm not working. Yeah. That's not right. And also, we're fucking 24 hours away from filming. We were like, is this a good idea? And they're like, you know,
It's on. Yeah.
You know, you're like, okay, let's go. But I knew we were going to get fucking, we got flack. You know,
did you get flack for it?
Yeah. There's always people fucking.
Oh, what, keyboard warriors, yeah.
Yeah, fuck it. You know, I'm like, I see your point, actually, but it's the job I do.
You must have been rubbing your hands, all of you, nudging each other, going, fucking, we're going to stitch up.
I got that. Do you know what?
Well, how would you?
No.
Okay.
We weren't. We were like, right, we're here.
Deep down, there must have been something. There must have been. Imagine if we come in now, I'm nudging each other.
I'm pretty apolitical, to be fair. I don't. People are like, who do you? I'm not. I believe in people looking out for each other.
Yeah.
Not fucking one way or the other. Yeah. We should all be, anyway. But yeah, of course. It's like, fucking hell. You like that?
Yeah, but hold on a minute. It is actually Matt Hancock.
There's a politician that people want to see get grilled. Yeah. So you're like, okay,
perfect.
So we. You know, but we did go in there. I'm being honest now. We went in there as a four and we were like, right, we are going to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, on the show, you know, people hang themselves. We don't need to fucking bait anyone.
Yeah.
We don't need to bait anyone because most people will do something that will. So we've gone in there, we've been fair. And he is a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And if you ask him to do something, he puts a fucking 110%.
He did, didn't he? Yeah.
Digs in.
Fair play to him on that front.
But then the bit that got me a little bit is that actually when we're filming it, we don't see everything and then hear what they say. And me and Chris Oliver were sat down with him in that interview. We're like, Colin, what are you doing here? And he's like, well, I can't remember how exactly it went. Yeah. You'd have to watch it again. But it's like, well, I went through something pretty big. And we're like, all right, what was that? He could have gone anywhere, mate.
Yeah.
We're not going to fucking... And he was like, well, dealt with a pandemic, didn't we? Mm. Didn't I? And we're like, did you? He's like, yeah, I did. And he got all fronty.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And we did the whole thing anyway. We talked to him. We spoke about things, challenged him on some stuff, you know, put stuff to him. And actually, we were like, look, the fucking slate's wiped clean here.
Yeah.
You know, you can... just take it for what it is. And off he went. Anyway, he then went out of there into the fucking, their recruits dorm with the rest of the celebs. And they're like, what happened? And he was like, well, you know, asked us the obvious questions. And they're like, what about? And they're like, well, they asked me about the pandemic, didn't? And I was like, no, we didn't. Watch that. You wanted to talk about it.
Mm.
You led the conversation. Mm. As soon as you went down that route, we're like, fine, we'll go down there. Mm. We'll go where you want to go. So I'm like, fucking watch it carefully because I watch everything carefully.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But no, but it's done. The show is done fair as well.
Yeah.
Even the producers will be like, okay, we've got to be, it's balanced.
Mm.
Everyone's like, oh, it's all a stitch up. It's not.
Do you enjoy going away on these, when they call you up and say, right, we're going away? For how long would you be in somewhere like Vietnam? How long would you be in these places for?
Vietnam is probably about 5 weeks-ish.
Does that excite you before going there?
I love traveling. I love going away and working abroad. I love working with the lads. And the production, we have it's a great laugh.
Mm.
It is stressful.
Is it stressful, is it?
Yeah.
Why?
Lots of different departments within the production. They, you know, there's different tasks. You're trying to move that many people. Okay. You have someone that's the first AD, the first assistant director, who is responsible for moving people and schedules.
Okay,
that is a fucking hard job.
Yeah.
That person. There's a guy on it called Nick. He's been doing the last few. a thankless task. I'll thank him now. But, you know, we all lose our shit. You know, we're supposed to be here fucking driving around in circles. Fucking hell, mate. And he's like, fuck. He's trying to move cameras here, there and everywhere. They're trying to get him up the top of a mountain. And there's helicopters coming in. They're burning fuel, which everyone's like, oh, that's fucking another 10 grand done. He's like, hey, and that's why it gets stressful. It's a lot of moving parts. Lot of moving parts. You've got the med department that are trying to look after everyone. You've got psychologists keeping an eye on everyone. You've got health and safety.
Cameras sure everywhere.
We're not doing something too stupid. And we're like, we want to do this. And they're like, you can't do that. That's fucking dangerous. And you're like, we're being idiots. Like, yeah, fuck that. Hang on a minute. Let's have a fucking.
Yeah.
Well, it's really exciting.
There's a lot
it's
of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts.
Yeah. So what opportunities have arisen on the back of SAS on TV?
It's given me all the opportunities. You've had me being sat here with you.
Yeah. But that's the biggest one, isn't it?
Writing. Going on to, that's the fucking highlight, mate.
Of course.
Mate, couple of years ago, I got asked to turn the Christmas lights on at a hotel. But this has overshadowed that. If I can come in and like turn the lights on that
turn
cheese
on,
plant.
Hey on, mate, whack it on.
This year coming.
For your, tell me about the opportunity that arose for you when you went out and saw the drug cartels in South America.
So that's an opportunity from SAS, really. You know, you get splashed on telly. Someone sees you and thinks he would be good for this idea.
Yeah.
So I got asked if I wanted to be a part of something. Initially, it was called Miami Vice.
Was it?
It's just a working title where they thought, right, let's get him out to Miami and mix with all the shady characters out there and see the police and, you know, sounded cool. Mm. I was like, yeah, cool. And then it changed. It was like, fly me out to South and Central America and properly going deep into it. And it was properly.
Did you go into the underbelly of it?
Yeah.
What were the countries you went to?
Peru, Colombia, and Mexico.
Wow.
Peru was first, and it was, you know, that was the roughest, as in we flew into Lima. I remember having a nice hotel in Lima for about one or two nights. And then we did this drive down to the Vrain Valley. It was a fucking long drive.
Yeah.
Well, no, there's loads of bits cut out, actually. We flew from Peru to a place called Ayacucho, where we met a groomer that groomed young travellers to mule cocaine.
Yeah.
Fucking dark. But Ayacucho's like a party town.
Yeah.
It's like on the start of the Inca Trail. Flew in there, did some... That whole thing didn't make it. We did a scene in Lima with a girl that had just come out of fucking prison from muling. She did 10 years in a Peruvian nick, and it's an Aussie girl. She's fucking, mate. It was fucking all these things, and they never made it into the show.
Yeah.
Like the girl, her story was brutal. Her name was, fuck. Can't remember her first name now.
English.
Might be
English.
Bronwyn. Yeah, well, she's Aussie.
Aussie, okay.
But she basically had a kid when she was young in Oz. Woke up one day, it died. Had an absolute meltdown, decided to go and, do good stuff around the world. Traveled to Africa as a bit of a mission, like working for an NGO or a missionary. And she ended up getting, I think she got a...
Yeah.
And then off the back end of that, she caught AIDS.
Ugh.
And like her life was fucking... Anyway, she ended up, muling. Ugh. She was like, fuck it.
Nothing to lose.
And then got nicked in Peru, carrying a load of cocaine, and did 10 years in a Peruvian prison. Brutal. She just got out. She got out when we flew in. She'd literally been out.
Do you know some of those prisons out there are mixed as well?
Yeah, no, hers
was
a female
a mixed
one. Yeah, hers was female. But yeah, it was a brutal story.
What did you notice on the underbelly? How did you feel when you were flying out there going, hold on a minute, who's organised this? Who's going to the underbelly gangs? Who's going to the cartels?
Who's organised
it? Yeah, but I'm saying, like, is it some young... runner going, you know what?
No,
I'll find out.
I'll tell you who organised that. My missus. She was the story. She did all the fucking... She did a lot of work on that. She actually flew out before we did.
To go and meet?
To meet a few people. She was doing some dodgy shit. And to be fair, I was like, fucking hell, she's out there on her own. She went into one of the Peruvian prisons and all sorts.
Fair play.
And then once I got out there, we weren't allowed to work together. So she flew. She had to fly back. She was fuming.
Why weren't you allowed to work together?
It's like a security risk, apparently.
Okay.
I think that's fucking playing it a little bit too safe. Mm. But to be fair, I felt better that she wasn't.
Mm.
And then we did those trips. We did We did Lima Ayacucho. Fucking hell, probably said it wrong. Someone will fucking hammer me for that. And then we got to another location. Can't remember where. And then from there, we did this epic drive. So we had to drive from this location. It was like 12 hours down into the very valley, like on death roads.
Mm.
We'd like fucking dropped 1,000-foot drops fucking on.
Oh, my.
Got down into the Vray, where the Vrame is where they make all the cocaine.
All the cocaine. Yeah. It's funny. I remember seeing them. We're coming through here. Then we're going to meet the cocaine chef.
Yeah, yeah. Old Jamie Oliver.
Yeah, Jamie Oliver. You're the cocaine chef. We're going into the cocaine kitchen right now. How mad is it? There was like kilos of cocaine like this. And they said they're flogging them for 150 quid.
Yeah.
And but then coming out like,
he hadn't made it by that stage. Yeah. It was just all these balls that he'd
of fucking, like chalk. Yeah. Yeah.
Looked like a fucking climbing.
Mm.
Powder, but he knocked it up there, and then we got fucking rumbled. There was like, because we're white guys.
Yeah. How many of you?
Me, four of us.
Just with what, one? With two of them with cameras, one without a camera, and yourself.
Yeah, me, Aldo, the cameraman, and the director.
So who's going in? Going, I'm here. Here's our celebrity from England. Here he is, Foxy. Turn up. How you doing, mate? How did it work?
You have a fixer. They link you up. So we drove at night through the night. Well, not through the night, but early.
Yeah.
Got out of one vehicle into another one, got to this place, and the chef and his flunky were sketched out.
Yeah.
They're like, fucking. And,
yeah.
Because they knew that any other Peruvians that knew we were there, we'd fucking potentially get fucking killed.
Yeah.
But there was people were fucking, as the light was coming up, because we thought that we were going to be there, do the stuff, and then we'd have to wait there until dark.
Mm.
And then it was, as the light came up, people were cutting around in the jungle. So we're in the fucking jungle.
So right in the mix in the jungle, yeah. Is it?
The Vray Valley's in the middle of nowhere, mate. It's like villages and towns that were just rough as we were. The place we were staying in, I think it was called San Francisco. It had a red bridge over the fucking river as well. But the place we were staying in was this hostel, mate. It was fucking depressing. We walked in like depressing. The root is shit. There's like bugs and shit everywhere. Mate. My shower, to get the shower hot, I had to turn this. There was like an electrical thing the water ran through with like bare wires. And I was like, for a hot shower, I'm going to get electrocuted. Yeah, I fucking know, I'll have a cold one.
Did you get the fear at all?
What fear, though?
No, what I'm saying is the fear. You've been at war. You've now come in and going, you know what? I'm going into the mix of these drugs cartels. There must have been a point where you're not carrying anything. You know they're going to be carrying.
I was fucking scared, yeah, but I felt confident. I was in a better place then. I felt confident we could. I know I'm okay at chatting to people.
Yeah.
And I'm genuinely there not to fucking look down. Like, they're in a fucking shit situation. You know, came back and spoke openly about the fact that they're victims. They are victims. Yeah. They're born in a place that doesn't give a fuck about them. And everyone's like, they're in the drugs world. Mm. They're all. So I'm like, no, they're not.
No,
they ain't got.
They've got a clue. They don't know what's going on the other side of the world.
And to be fair, a lot of those countries, I would suggest that the governments are glad that the cartels are there propping up those communities, because it means they can skim a bit more off the top.
Yeah.
So they don't have to pump it into that part of the world. I'm being cynical there.
No, I hear you. What's the benefit of them? How much were they getting paid? Like your wife's gone out there and gone, you know what? There's $5,000 on the table or not.
I don't know how that works.
No, okay.
And I don't, because you've got to be very careful when it comes to, I don't think you're allowed to pay people who are nefarious.
You've got to pay them. What are they going to do with
there for? There's going to be
they're
something.
They're covered up
there's
anyway.
There's going to be something involved, but I don't know what. I genuinely don't. I don't want to know. That's fucking, as someone that's front of the camera, that's not my.
That's not your
thing. I don't need that knowledge. Yeah. It got sketchy in Mexico. We had a hit put out on us. And we had to fucking do a bit of a fucking dodgy deal. Yeah, that was fucking.
Mate, there you go. There's $5,000. Leave us alone.
Yeah, that was fucking.
What happened there?
Oh, there was a little bit of a mix-up, bit miscommunication. Cartel thought we were doing one thing, we weren't. We were doing something else somewhere with the cartel, and they basically said they wasted their time. Sent a couple of hitmen round to the hotel we're staying in Culiacan. We weren't there. Fortunately, we were up in the fucking. We spent the night. Spent a couple of nights with the fucking heroin farmers up in the Golden Triangle up in the hills. Got wind through the fixer, was like, fucking hell, they've just And we're like, what the fuck? Hang on a minute. It all got calmed down. Ended up fucking doing the old brown envelope.
Drop off
in a fucking pizza bar.
Yeah.
There was like some weird like code word to London.
Yeah.
Extra pepperoni meant to fucking everything's all going. We're alive. Sorry, it's you.
What was Peru, Mexico, and the other one?
Colombia.
What was the difference between those three, would you say?
Right. So Peru is it's responsible. It's at the bottom of the chain.
Yeah.
That's where they make it, really. They make it everywhere else. Yeah. And it's like, it's dangerous, but it never felt like it was going to proper kick off. Mm. It'd be like farmers.
Okay.
Like the peasants' revolt back in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Colombia is fucking, there's a very sketchy atmosphere because the cartels have been doing it for your decades. You know, they've got a long history of warring over drugs. The war is being fought technically by sophisticated forces, funded and supported by the Western world, America, Britain, to a certain degree. And there's a very sketchy atmosphere. And weirdly, we saw drugs in Peru. We saw no drugs in Colombia. We were close to it. We were close to them.
Mm.
But the people that work within it out there are fucking very, very apprehensive.
It
was sketchy. But it was, we went into a barrio in Buenaventura, which is a fucking dangerous place for anyone that is. Well, it's a dangerous place for anyone. Went in there. And I've spoken to people since that know about that place from like the law enforcement side, people that are, the Colombian authorities, and they're like, "You went where?"
Yeah.
They're like, We don't even send our own people in there. And we're like, we were there, and it was fucking sketch. And I was like looking at fucking routes out of if it kicked off. But we fucking came away from it. But then so that's very sketchy. Mexico, we saw lots of drugs again.
Yeah.
But that place is fucking
madness.
Scary.
Yeah.
That's the scariest. It's fucking scary.
Yeah.
I remember that show came out. It did the Channel 4 rounds. It then came out on Netflix. And not long after it came out on Netflix, I went on holiday to Tulum with my missus. And it seemed like a great idea.
Mexico, Tulum.
Yeah, Mexico.
Yeah. Lovely.
We landed at Cancun. Got off, waiting for baggage, a couple of Mexicans, you're there, yeah. And I was like, what have I done? And I remember we're driving from fucking Cancun down to Tulum to the resort. And my missus was like, what's the fucking... And I was just like, looking down all the fucking side streets, I'm like, what have we done? I'm going to get fucking... Why did I come back here? Like, completely overreacting. And then we got into the resort and you're like, all inclusive. You don't even need to leave.
Yeah. Exactly. Two pina coladas.
I recovered soon enough. But it was
quality.
A little bit of a
That's quality.
But it is dangerous.
Where was the bit when you were? Was it in Mexico where you saw a murder happening?
You didn't see it happening,
but it was filmed. You went to the scene.
Yeah, that was fucking.
I saw people running around with guns and stuff. I was like,
it didn't translate very well. Part of it, but we turned up at the scene. And there was a torso on the floor with no head, arms or legs, bleeding out, and there was a bag next to it. And then everyone was on edge. It was like, fucking hell. Then the copper emptied the bag and everything that was missing rolled out, which was fucking hell. It was like, and that it just happened.
Yeah.
It'd just been dumped, he'd been killed a bit before.
Mm.
And then as that was all playing out, so everyone's on edge anyway, there's fucking police and military there. It sounded like an explosion and gunfire. The other side of the roundabout is like a big, it's like the old Liverpool Victoria roundabout. It's like, fucking hell. And they, all the military and coppers were running, cocking their fucking automatic weapon. And I was more worried about one of them fucking having an accident because that's normally what happens, the irony. It's like someone accidentally fires his weapon and you catch it up. But I thought it was a come on that the cartel had done that and then they wanted a load of fucking authority there just to
tear them up.
And then in Mexico, they'll do it.
Yeah.
They don't care. I mean,
there's no rules in Mexico.
No, there's footage of the cartel shooting up at a, an, a helicopter gunship, and they don't give a shit. They're, mate, they're crazy. Mm. They are crazy.
Were you glad to come home after that one?
I loved it. The experience was amazing, but I remember we got on that flight. I think the final, you know, the main flight out was from Mexico City, and the plane took off. Seatbelt size went off, and me and Aldo went and found each other and just like, we've done it. We made it. We made it.
how's your world been since 2020?
Yeah,
2020, the last 3-4 years now.
Yeah, good.
Same. What other different stuff you've been doing? You're still doing the SAS show?
That's still going. We do the US one, which is great.
Got the US one as well?
Yeah, we're doing it in the US. We've done 2 seasons already, potentially doing a third this year.
Wow.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. New book coming out in April
called
"Embrace the Chaos."
Good title.
52 tactics to getting through life. I've broken. I wanted to do something different, so I said to Matt, the guy I write with, and the publishers, I was like, I want to break life down into a pack of cards. So there's 4 suits, and there's 13 tactics in each one.
Love it.
So you got mission.
Yeah.
That's when you plan to do something big. Could be anything. Go on an expedition, buy an house, move, all that, that sort of planned stuff, which is stressful.
Mm.
Then there's calm. That's the boredom, really.
Yeah.
When you're not sort of, you're in a lull, not planned, you know. But the pandemic's a classic example for some people, you know, fuck all going on.
Yeah.
Then there's chaos. That's the unplanned fucking carnage of life.
I love that bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. That's the red button.
Chaos bit. Yeah, boom. Give me that all day.
You've got the chaos. And then there's recovery, which is planned, you know, recovery.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you deal with it? And me and Matt have looked at other people's take on psychological, you know, methods and that, and brought it in. It's my favorite book.
Yeah, I bet.
I read it for the audio a few weeks ago, and you do the book and Matt does the hard graft. Yeah. He's fucking making it make sense, you know. Mine's just I dump and he fucking, but and I've read, you read bits and do, happy, but then I love coming to the audio, recording the audio, and I read it and say it loud, and I was like, fucking love this book.
Quality.
I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah.
How long did that take to read a whole book for you on the audio?
A couple of days, really. Three days booked out. We did it in 2 and a bit.
How many books have you written so far?
3.
Mate, this 3 is now. Amazing. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Everything you've achieved, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about both of us? Obviously, you're ambassador for Through Dark. They've partnered with us at the Eventful Lives podcast.
I was with Stas this morning. He said that.
Yeah.
He told me, because I didn't know, actually.
Yeah.
But that's good.
Yeah, it's great. It's perfect fit for both of us. There Free we go. Dog. Check out Through Dark. Bad.
Yeah.
How's that been for you? I just think their clothing's amazing. I think Stas and Louis are two unbelievable guys.
I love
and what
them.
They've created in the last 4 or 5 years is off the charts, right?
Yeah, I love them. I love being with them. Around the brand's amazing. I'm pleased to be, you know, a friend of the brand and ambassador, and I hope I'll remain so. You know, I'm loyal. I think I've got a reasonably loyal pedigree. I like to think, and I'd love to think that they want me around for a long time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the kit's awesome.
Yeah. It's another level, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, amazing. Tell me about your wife, and you got married this year, or Jules. 2023, Jules.
Jules is an amazing person. She's like the, I say she's almost like the final cog in the, my
puzzle
of, fixing. She's supported me. She's put up with some shit and done very well at supporting me. She's a great person. She's also tried to farm me off to faraway places and get killed. I thought she'd bumped the old insurance premiums up at one point, but fucking came back. She's like, shit. she's awesome.
Yeah.
She's in TV. She does produce a director. She's directed a few things, produced an awful lot. She actually produced a little shout out to her. She produced a show that was on Netflix not long ago called MH370, The Plane That Disappeared.
Ah, did she?
And that, mate, that was 2.5 years she worked on that. And I was privy to her working on that, and she put in a fucking shift.
Yeah, mate.
So fair play.
Massive shout out to Jules.
Yeah, big shout out to her there. Massive, there was a lot of work that went into that.
Yeah. Foxy, we could speak for hours, mate.
Oh, I know.
We could speak for hours. You know what? I've really loved this.
Is it all right?
Mate, amazing. You're like the epitome of eventful lives.
Well, yeah.
And we've just touched the surface. Well, I know there's a lot more we could do. Maybe a part two later.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah. Mate, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Nice one.
Jeez, yeah, mate. Funny.
So have I.
Yeah, really good.
It's a great setup here as well.
Thank you, mate.
I thought it was going to be a bit Mickey Mouse, but it's not. I'm only joking.
Quality. Hey, Bournemouth Sevens, end of May.
We're in. I think I am actually about. I think I'm coming back from some work.
Yeah, mate.
But we'll keep in touch. Yeah.
Bournemouth Sevens Festival, end of May, wallop.
Carnage.
Get on the beers, carnage. Yeah. You're a gentleman.
The red button waits.
But I'm grafting. That's the problem.
Yeah, there we go. Let's chat part two.
Part two.
The red button. Revisited.
Revisited. Quality. Cheers, mate. Nice You're one. A gentleman. Hi, guys. I really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Can you do us a favour and leave us a review, as it massively helps us grow the show? Cheers, guys.